DW, the 77%.
Hello and welcome to the 77%, a show that gives you the platform to freely debate issues affecting young people across Africa. Today, we are talking about rural-urban migration and what is driving this trend. Now, starting from the 1960s, more people in Africa are moving to urban areas.
No electricity, no water, no source of entertainment. As a graduate, when I go back to the village, what do you expect me to do?
When I went there, established a workshop. For over 3 months, I didn't get even $10.
Look, it is just a perception. It is because someone thinks that when you are in the village, you can't make it.
I will go to America, I will go to Europe, I will find a job there, no matter what, even if I die.
The lack of opportunity, that is one of the major reasons why many young people migrate. But is that the only push factor?
The governments of Ghana in the past and in the present have deliberately kept especially the tertiary institutions in the major cities.
We'll also be hearing if the concentration of infrastructure in Africa's urban center is a reason why many young people are migrating. You can be part of this debate by writing to us and giving us your opinion and feedback on our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Michael Oti, and I'm your host for today. More than half of the world today now lives in urban areas. That is according to the 2017 Drivers of Migration and Urbanization in Africa report by the United Nations. Now, picture this. Urban areas in sub-Saharan Africa currently contain 400 million people. By 2045, this is expected to reach 950 million. While the population is doubling in many cities, the land area remains the same, further congesting already crowded cities. Our correspondent, Edith Kimani, has been speaking to some young residents in the city of Tamale in northern Ghana to find out what is compelling many of them to leave their hometowns for the cities.
And to begin with, I'm going to speak to a social analyst here as part of our panel, just to give us an overview of the situation in Tamale. Is it a problem, young people leaving?
It's a serious problem. I can attest to the facts. Between 2000 and 2010, the population increase in Accra was 40.72%. And this was attributed to rural-urban migration from the north to the south. So we can say that, of course, people here are really moving.
Okay. Dr. Madrid, to what extent does education or lack of it have to do with this dramatic migration from rural areas to urban areas?
The governments of Ghana in the past and in the present have deliberately kept especially the tertiary institutions in the major cities. It's a deliberate policy, but government cannot give these institutions to every community. And so this is compelling people. This is a push factor. It's pushing people to the urban centers to educate.
It is. You see, when we talk of this migration, sometimes there's that tendency to put the blame on government. But I think we all have to share part of the blame. Look, it will interest you to know that some of this rural-urban migration, it is just a perception. It is because someone thinks that when you are in the village, you can't make it. But, I mean, why would you leave your comfort zone and go to the unknown?
But we've just heard
no water, no electricity, no water, no source of entertainment. As a graduate, I come, then you say I should, because in the way you go to the rural area, most of us are farmers, and we are mostly subsistence farmers. There is no commercial farming. As a graduate, when I go back to the village, what do you expect me to do? My community is waiting for me to feed. My family is there, and then I'm going to feed on the small farm that my parents are doing. But it is the role of the government to provide these social amenities. Electricity is not the duty of the youth. Water is not the duty of the youth. The roads are not the duty of the youth. It's the duty of the government. development. And if these things are there, I don't think the youth would migrate.
Okay, I'm going to come back to the commander in just a short while. Does this sound like it's your reality, that it's just your mindset? It's just...
It's very different from what I'm thinking about. I've been born and bred in a local village called Dalong in the Kumbungu district. I've been there all my life until I finished my secondary education. You know what? When I came to Tamale and learned the job for about 5 years and I was not making it, I went to Libya and stayed there for about 4 or 5 years and came back. Look, when I went to Libya, I learned auto electricals. I became an auto electrician. When I came back here, my people over there called me to come and establish my workshop there. When I went there, established the workshop. For over 3 months, I didn't get even $10. And the pennies that, or the cents that I'm taking today now, I'm gradually packing them. And I'll get the way and I'll go back. Before when I go back there, all die be die. If I get into the sea and die, it is the same like you get an a bus here or you take a tour or something and you're going to Accra, then you have a crash and you die. If you die in a car accident, it's die. If you die in the high seas there, you die. If you die on the desert there, you die. I don't fear desert until my government provides something for me. And you know what? In Africa, I can speak of Ghana. Anytime there is a political party in Ghana or in governance, what they do is they will bring out the programs, all right, but you go there and they ask you of your certificate. If you don't have, so if I don't have certificate, I won't eat. Must living be limited to only people who are educated?
Okay.
So what if my father died and I drop out from education, nobody take care of me? Does that mean I should go and be chopping grass because I'm not educated? Why can I come to office and ask for common labor decision and you are telling me to go and bring my certificate? If I have certificate, I would have been going to look for the white jobs there. I will go to America, I will go to Europe, I will find a job there, no matter what, even if I die.
Umar is arguing that where has it become the norm that you have to have an education in order to get government services?
Yes, I don't think that government service is one of the poorly paid sectors in Ghana. So the youth have to make their mind that they can make it outside the government sector. Yeah. I know a lot of people who are making it in agriculture. What the government has failed is that it has not improved the livelihood systems of the rural people. They are into farming. Nowadays, because of the growth of urban areas, many farmlands are taken over for residential and construction purposes. So these farmers have to go far away and farm in the hinterlands. Mm. They don't have the capital. If you go there, they don't have the machinery. So how are they going to do the farming?
Well, let's ask the farmer here. How are you farming? Is it difficult for you given all the challenges that we're articulating?
Yes, it is. It is in the sense that the population growth in Ghana, if you consider it day in and day out, we are building houses. We are construction roads. So it's been the farmlands have been taken by those distance. So you have to go to the far places. And if you don't have the capital to go and do so, you have to first go and clear the land, take the farm equipment and go and do. Where will you get it if you don't have the money? So it's very difficult for the farmer in that sense.
Okay, let me come to Mr. Aminu here, because I know that you had left this region, you had actually left the country and you decided to come back. And now you're urging young people to stay here. What created that shift for you?
Personally, I took the idea, I left Ghana through the desert to Libya, through the high sea to Italy, and where I suffered a lot. On the desert, I lost many of my colleagues, and on the high sea, I lost many of my colleagues. I was fortunate that I didn't die. Now God saved me, and finally I was deported back to Ghana. So when I came, I said to myself, even my enemy, I wouldn't allow to pass through what I went through. We are currently embarking on a sustained educational campaign program, trying to educate the general public, especially the youth, to understand the traumas that migrants are going through. If they clearly understand the traumas that they are going through, I think it's one of the measures that will reduce the rate or the trend at which these people are going through.
Okay. And of course, one of the situations that happens from this desperation we've heard here is families actually abandoning other members of their families. And Nana, I know that you're very familiar with this. I'll come back to you, Commander. I know you want to really tell me a point, but Nana, what does this mean for young girls and women when they are in desperate situations in rural areas and then they have nothing to do?
When they have nothing to do, they have to move to the urban areas. That's when they move to the urban areas, they see that their peer groups are living a life that they can't live. So they have to go into a deviant job, that's prostitution, theft and all those things, to be able to live that life they want to live.
Let's get back to the
community. I just want to address one issue. Some of our brothers who live from the north and the rural areas and go to the south, sometimes when they get money, instead of them to help and put up the factories and put up the jobs in the villages,
so that their brothers, their unfortunate brothers, will get the chance to stay. They would rather put up some of this infrastructure in the same cities. What are you doing? Hold on. What are you doing? You are therefore increasing it.
Okay.
But I think it is high time we say enough is enough. We have to build our rural communities ourselves. When we go to the rural areas, we go and help those who are already there, those who hail from the urban areas. And it is high time that we admit that, look, let me help my rural folk. The money that I'm making in the city, let me bring it to the village, build a factory, do some enterprise, employ two or three of my rural folks. And by so doing, we are going to decrease the menace of rural-urban migration.
So the commander is saying enough is enough. Stop blaming the government all the time. It's time that the people in the rural areas start giving back and investing to the rural areas. Clement, are you nodding because you're in agreement?
Yes, somehow, because I think that is a governance issue too. If we involve the local people in the governance system of our country, I believe that things will change. We've been talking about opportunities and resources. Yes, somebody mentioned that government is coming with policies and programs. But these programs and policies, there's nothing like transparency in its implementation or accountability. If the local people are involved, then they will know who and who are qualified to benefit from whatever program or policies. But this is the case, they are not involved. Somebody takes the decision somewhere and they politicize the whole kind of programs and then the policies. Said that the real beneficiaries, they don't get it. But different people who are already well-to-do have access to some of these opportunities. It is not the youth or the people to provide electricity or water, safe drinking water in their communities. Their own is to pay taxes. And when they pay the taxes, there is somebody who should make sure that the taxes are working for the people to get the water and the electricity. All these things are not happening. There are communities you go on paper, they have electricity. But when you go to the communities, no electricity. How do we look at all these things? If the youth are involved in the governance process, allowing them to be part of the decision-making process, then they can also monitor some of these things, and then that will bring the amenities that we need to stabilize our people to stay back in their communities.
So as the citizens of this nation, why aren't you demanding more from your leaders?
As youth, I think it is our responsibility to hold our duty bearers accountable to these policies. But it also falls on the duty bearer also to give us the environment to be able to engage with them. In our current situation, from the district assembly to the national level, it's not easy for youth groups to easily go demanding for information on policies that are being implemented.
Okay, so we've obviously addressed these problems, and there are many. But now I want to figure out how we move past them. Yeah? How do we make sure that that doctor stays? How do we make sure that that teacher not only stays, but is happy to stay?
Providing service to communities is very good. But I think our focus should be on the advocacy now. Let's build the capacities of the people in the community so that they can have the power to engage the duty bearers to get what they want. Because you can't be in that community forever. And once you can't be in that community forever, it's not only good that you go and provide the water, electricity or whatever and you leave it. But if you build the capacity of the people, they themselves will know that we are paying taxes and so we should demand what is ours.
Umar, what is going to make you be happy in a village? What would it take?
Yeah, I'm not so wicked enough to leave my 70-year-old mother and three of my siblings and go anywhere and live without them. I need to be gainfully employed. Currently, I am an auto electrician. If the state is interested in bringing up youth and supporting youth, I'll be very happy to stay because I have my own shop. If there is an opportunity of which I can access loan, whether from the bank or from the governance sector, of which I can use to develop my shop, why not? I'll be very happy to stay in my country rather to be sleeping on the desert for 3, 5, 6 days without water and food sometimes.
Okay.
You see?
Yeah.
So the government of our countries or the leaders must sit up and realize that though education is the key to the success of the country, there are people who are downtrodden. There are another of unfortunate ones who will by all means be dropped out. How can we go up with them?
All right. So Gainful employment for you is a big one. What is, for you, the major thing that needs to happen in order to stop the flows of people from rural to urban areas?
We must change our attitude. That is the most important thing. You know, there are a lot of people who have the opportunity at the rural communities, but yet they still turn down those opportunities and try to migrate outside. Why? You understand that? We must change our attitude. There's my officer here said the perception. I think perception is also one of the most important thing. Some people think at the rural communities, what they don't have at the rural community, when they get to places like Accra, Kumasi, or urban areas, they will have those things. But ask yourself, what condition are you going to be?
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're talking about families taking responsibility for this situation as well. Commander, I want to come to you, please.
I have a three-pronged approach to the solution.
Mm-hmm.
One, government. One, the individual, the migrants, and then the civil society.
Mm-hmm.
The problem we have in Africa is the mindset.
Mm.
We need a proper reorientation of our minds. You will see an African who drink ice water and put the sachet on the ground and he doesn't feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Elsewhere, you will feel guilty. So we have to reorient our minds and believe that we can make it even where we are. And if we reorient our minds and believe that we can make it, we will stay. And this is tied to the civil society.
Okay. And finally, I want to get to Jawarat. You had a lot of points, and I want to know how we can move beyond this point so that in 2025, we're not talking about the same issues.
And if I'm a social worker, I work with Rise Ghana. As in Rise Ghana, what we do to curb rural urban migration is that even in the absence of all the social amenities, we want to tell the youth that all hope is not lost. They said the key to success is education. So we need to be serious with our education. We need to learn. They said that you get paid more when you use the brain than when you use your bare hands. And to use your brain, you need to educate yourself to the higher level. So in the absence of all these social amenities, we are encouraging the youth to be serious, get enrolled, stay in school, get serious, pass your exams, and move ahead with your education. But to the government, please, the redistribution of our resources. Mm-hmm. It should be fair. Give to the rural area what they deserve and the urban area what they deserve. And definitely, if we have all the social amenities in the rural area, the people will not move to the urban areas.
I think, again, what is left out, but paramount in our area is the entrepreneurship. Sometimes, some people, when they are trained, they are able to go back and set up themselves. Or even better still, the stakeholders can set them up, the NGOs and the rest. When I was having an NGO, we had a particular platform. We just picked two people from the districts, but from Accra.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have evidence of one guy in Wulesi, where I'm coming from. He was brought here, trained, he's gone back. He was given just 200 Ghana cedis. Today he has a big shop because he knows how to do the wiring. He was trained on electricity.
Yeah.
He knows how to do the wiring. So he does the wiring, comes and feeds the money into the store. And today the store is the biggest electrical store. So entrepreneurship is equally very important. We can train as much as we can. Some will survive, even in businesses.
Yeah.
In America, they said out of about 16, sometimes only 5 survive. And so if we train 100 and even 40 are able to be in business, we have done a good job. So that we can do that continuously. And after some time, we are able to make people stay, or we are able to bring people who are there. But let's not forget the fact that we cannot stop rural urban migration,
yeah,
because some of them are just very important.
That was our correspondent Edith Kimani speaking to young people in Tamale in northern Ghana. Now, although the current rate of migration is quite scary, all hope is not lost, especially if governments begin to ensure the fair distribution of development and resources. That brings us to the end of this edition of the 77%. You can watch the full debate on our YouTube page, DW Africa. You can also listen to this show and previous editions by visiting dw.com/77. Keep the 77% debate going by visiting our Facebook page, DW Africa, and don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com facebook.com/DW Africa. Until next time, I'm Mike Luti. Bye for now.
They told me everybody's 15 minutes in a different time zone. And since I have it at the moment, you don't wanna shine my light on. Get your life, little mama, won't you get your life on? Ain't nothing cooler than the wrong moves when you do them to the right song. Let's shoot this movie and put the shit on repeat. I hope this memory's not making you fall asleep.